Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, and we've come to the end of this Exopolitics Radio program. And the concept of amnesty, I find that is a very difficult one for people. I've gotten feedback. You know, the whole concept of looking at a restorative justice approach to war crimes versus a retributive justice approach to war crimes. The retributive justice approach to war crimes is that of course, retribution, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Okay, you committed war crimes, you either are executed if it's a death penalty, or you spend your life at hard labor, or you spend a certain amount of time in prison or some other penalty type. The restorative justice concept is different, and it comes out of the indigenous, the First Nations or Aboriginal tradition in Canada. It's now being applied in the penal system and has begun to be applied in the war crime system. And the concept of restorative justice is that when a crime has been committed, the culprit, what needs to happen is that the balance needs to be restored in the larger community, so that there's a part of that restoration. And a concept of amnesty in return for truth, in return for releasing to the public the advanced time travel, teleportation, advanced propulsion drive, alien reproduction vehicles, all of these large craft, the reported U.S. Space Navy that the U.S. military may have, the reported secret bases that they may have on various celestial bodies throughout the solar system. All of these were made with U.S. tax funds and under a constitutional guise and belong to the public and were granted under agreements for the benefit of the public. And so by right and by title and by constitutional law and by universal law need to be made public. And that's the purpose of a truth amnesty process. Exopolitics Radio is produced by Phoenix Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX, Progressive Talk Phoenix, and the Nova M Network. Executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director R.V. Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and truth amnesty-driven day, week, and life. Thank you. This is your host, Alfred Weber. Would you like to download instantly the book Exopolitics by Alfred Weber that founded the field of exopolitics and was the cosmic trigger to a paradigm shift of opening to extraterrestrial civilizations? Would you like to download a CD-ROM of Exopolitics Radio Season 1 uncut version with interviews you have not heard on air? You can do so now by going right now to our website, www.exopoliticsradio.com, and downloading. There is no shipping, there is no waiting. Downloading the book Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe by Alfred Weber, and the CD-ROM Exopolitics Radio Season 1 Uncut Version. You'll be helping yourself, Exopolitics, and Exopolitics Radio into Season 2. Thank you.
I'm so afraid.
I need to lose weight. I wish I could stop smoking.
I have so much stress.
I'm in pain.
Why am I sad?
I need to perform better.
I feel like there's no way out.
If you or someone you know needs help making healthy and significant life changes, they may benefit from hypnotherapy and life coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle. Hypnosis uses the power of the subconscious mind for recovery and health. It strengthens your natural psychic abilities. As hypnotherapy removes blocks and clarifies your inner knowledge, it allows you to move forward. Coaching offers a practical framework which strengthens the life changes you desire.
To find out more regarding hypnotherapy, life coaching, exoconsciousness, and how to achieve an integrated, peaceful, healthy, and harmonious state of being, call Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle at 602-615-1485. That's 602-615-1485. Or log on to www.rebeccahardcastle.com.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We're going to continue with our interview with Paula Harris, author of Exopolitics, How Do You Speak to a Ball of Light? Thank you. There was, as you also point out in the book, a 1978 unanimous resolution of the UN General Assembly, which in fact recognized extraterrestrial life, which urged members to conduct research programs in extraterrestrial life, and which suggested that a UN office of extraterrestrial life and of the UFO phenomenon be established.
Yes, this is the Grenada resolution, which, you know, I'm wondering, if this was started, what all happened? You know, these are questions. And, you know, when we talk about this, when we talk about the United Nations, we talk about member states and people opening up their files the way that England is now and France is doing it also. We're talking about politics. And that, you know, I was a ufologist for many, many years and know backwards and forwards the field. But when I realized how serious it was, I really came on board with you and Dr. Sala because these are policy issues. And then the interview with Paul Hellyer itself opened up many doors of looking at this in our lifetime as policy issues.
Well, then going on to Protocol 2, you say our stuff or their stuff. That is a question. By our stuff, you mean, are these flying saucers that people report seeing or exotic craft, are they human craft? that may be retro-engineered or whatever, or are they true extraterrestrial craft? And one of the big questions here on Exopolitics Radio, Paula, because we launched on March 10th, 2007, which was on the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights, which, as you know, was a two-mile-wide spacecraft witnessed by at least 10,000 witnesses over Phoenix, Arizona. Dr. Lynn Cattai was the very first guest on that anniversary program. And just a week after Exopolitics Radio launched, we like to call ourselves a cosmic trigger. The former governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, went public and said, oh, yes, I too was a witness to the craft back in March 13, 1997, and I think it was extraterrestrial. Now, you address the issue in Protocol 2, that is to say, we have to begin to be able to discern whether the craft that we're seeing are in fact human in origin or extraterrestrial in origin. What's your opinion for the folks here in Arizona and elsewhere that may be listening? What's your professional opinion about what the Phoenix Lights craft was?
No, I think that the Arizona sighting is their stuff. I think for many, many reasons. One of the reasons is that it is not logical that our government would test anything over a major city that big that would cause all that stir, that would bring up all the questions and the problems. And Fife Symington actually says in the movie, in the documentary, Out of the Blue, because I've been talking to James Fox, the producer, that he could only talk after he wasn't governor anymore. I mean, he basically, that interview was done in Santa Barbara after he wasn't governor, so he talked about seeing this. And he could tell the difference between, military and extraterrestrial. I mean, he had a background. I think he had a military background. But, and I also think it was extraterrestrial because it's still happening. I have a witness who contacts me and has sent me film footage of the Phoenix Lights, who is a security guard who works at a cement plant. And he sends me these homemade videos that he's up at 2 and 3 in the morning. And these lights are still appearing over the Australian mountains. And they are still, and they dim in and out. And I don't think that we would be testing our kinds of technology there. But Alfred, I want to add another thing that maybe your listeners know about, the Aviano, Italy footage that's on YouTube. I showed that 3 years ago. It was given to us. It is an up-close UFO. It was given to a bunch of researchers in Italy. It comes out of the woods. The photographer has a tripod. He is videoing this craft. It does a show. It does a circle around the power plant. And it goes very fast into the horizon. And I told the audience when they were looking at it, and they were fascinated, I said, this is our technology. Because it isn't logical that the aliens have given an appointment to a photographer to set up his tripod. Then I found out later from military personnel that where that particular craft was over Ponte di Giulio near the Aviano base, which means that was a place where the military does maneuvers. So the location, the kind of craft, and the fact, you have to use all your logic, the fact that it was being done for a photographer shows that it wasn't ours. That it is ours. So the fact that Clark McClellan told me that he had been told when he was working for NASA to look up in the skies when he went on vacation at Belize, he saw two UFOs. He said, was our technology. He was told in advance he would see them. That's in my book. So, you know, this is a problem. It's the protocol. We need to identify what's ours and what's theirs.
Right. Now, you mentioned just in the course of that another issue that I think strikes a protocol as well. We were talking about Governor Fife Symington and talking to James Fox, and you said, of course, quote, while he was governor, he could not speak out. But that I think, that clashes directly with the mission and role and responsibility of the governor of a state. Because here you had a two-mile-wide craft that flew over Phoenix, Arizona, witnessed by over 10,000 persons, and flew over a good part of the state of Arizona, jet planes from Luke Air Force Base, were sent out after it, and it phase shifted at that point and disappeared reportedly. But more than that, the deputy mayor of Phoenix, Frances Barlow, was petitioned by many of her constituents to find out what this was. There was a genuine community concern. So she brought this matter to the Open City Council and held hearings on it. And then she held numerous public hearings at the request of her constituents, i.e., she was acting within her job description as deputy mayor. So then the situation, but she was only a deputy mayor. So the governor, of course, had a different role because he commands the National Guard. He commands the entire state. The craft went over the entire state, so that from a protocol point of view, if he personally had seen it, and if he personally believed that it was extraterrestrial, he had a duty to speak out truthfully in his role as governor. So this strikes on the question of protocols, because people will vote for a governor because they believe in that governor's integrity to meet challenges precisely that, like that of the Phoenix Lights. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
Well, you know, Frances Barwood for me is a heroine. She is a heroine. And in my book, I have on page one, Unconventional Wisdom from Unconventional People, a quote from Robert Kennedy, the 20th of November. It says, "Few men are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censure of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage is rather a rare commodity than bravery in a battle or great intelligence. Yet it is essential, vital quality for those who seek to change a world that yields most painfully to change." And the thing is that you know, I put that there because there are very few people that will come forth and risk their jobs. And you know that you know, Frances Barwood risked her job there. And the thing that I criticize Fife Symington the most is not so much for not dealing with it, for the way he dealt with it, bringing out a man dressed in an alien costume and having him take off the top part of his costume is a sign of disrespect. It would have been better for him to have kept quiet and just said, "Look, I promised to look into it, to deal with it," and not ridicule it, because the ridicule was the sign of disrespect for all those people that had the sightings. It takes a courageous person to step to the plate, and we've had very few, Alfred, who will do that while in public office.
Exactly. Now, jumping over, just because you're, as I said, your book is like this feast. So there's all these delicate dishes that we want to go to. There's one here, I think, that relates to exopolitics in a particular way because it touches so much on what your interview with Paul Hellyer, the former Minister of Defense of Canada, talks about. And that's Protocol 7, International Cooperation and Research Criteria. And the essence of that, if people go to page 185 of your book, which I'm turning on, you say, "We need international cooperation. We need an international panel to create these protocols. This is about planet Earth and not about any individual country. We are one species, human. Can we cooperate in good faith with our own colleagues on an international level to develop some scientific criteria for investigation?" And I'm turning then to your interview with Paul Hellyer, and he talks about the two different paths that humanity seems to be on. On the one hand, we have what seems to be an interminable arms race, that is, the arms race in space, almost as though we're building a space armada to create, some say, a false war against the ETs, versus building a cooperation, a bridge of cooperation. There's that proposal for the, he says, quoting from Paul Hellyer, "We have to do something positive by way of cooperation." And Alfred Weber suggested a 10-year period, a decade of contact. somehow Paul, you know, seems to support that, where we can really focus on cooperation. How do you see how we're going to be able to move into the future and move away from this juggernaut and move toward a decade of contact, toward that cooperation?
Well, Alfred, you just asked me the $64,000 question. You just asked me that. I will add that I wrote about you in my book because you're the one that is talking about peace and space, and at least you're saying something that's intelligent about ban nuclear weapons, because, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that the sightings happened after the testing at the Trinity site, you know, after the Manhattan Project. I mean, if you're intelligent at all, you know that Roswell is right there, that the 509 bomb squadron was that squadron that was trained to deal with the atomic bomb. I mean,
right.
if you put everything together and you're intelligent, that's why I want people to study exopolitics. You figure, okay, well, that's when these people decided to say, here we are, because these crazy humans are starting to get out of control. And I do write about you in the book and talk about the fact that you suggested the decade of peace. But, you know, Canada has always been very, very pure and very, very avant-garde in suggesting these things. Canada has a really good reputation for being out there, for being clear and transparent. I mean, I think Canada has, and thanks to the ex-minister of defense, he's proved it. But people have asked me, why isn't it happening? Well, who stands to lose the most in this arms race? I mean, the technology that has been recovered is not in India. You know, the technology that we back engineered happens to be here in the United States. We're the ones, the United States in general, that has the most to lose with disclosure. Because, I mean, if you're looking at this as international cooperation, when we had the situation in Mexico with the Campeche situation a couple of years ago with the 11 UFOs that could be seen only in the infrared, and the Ministry of Defense of Mexico asked Jaime Maussan for help because the implication of only seeing these craft in the infrared means they're there all the time. It's just we're not seeing them. We in Italy saw it on our news, and in France they dealt with it. In Europe we saw the film footage, and it was never shown on any American newscast because it was real. And when now France is opening up its files or does the Cometa report, and by the way, the conclusion of the Cometa report that was done in France was that the Americans are hiding technology and please come clean and be transparent so we can deal with this. That was part of the conclusion. And when the Ministry of Defense, even though it may be only a sign in England, is talking about UFOs and opening up some of their files, and people that hear me talk say, well, why is the United States doing anything? Well, you know, it's because we have the most to lose. I don't think there's going to be an era of cooperation unless, and this, I'm going out on a limb here, Alfred, unless we have five UFOs over five international airports all over the world, like we did at O'Hare, because O'Hare didn't open the files and O'Hare didn't have us do anything on a political level. But if we had five of those, the tragedy would be interpreted as an invasion. But the good part about it was it would be that everybody would get together and talk about the five UFOs over five international airports.
Right. You know, it's very interesting that you mentioned the Chicago O'Hare sighting of November 7th, 2006, because that relates to your Protocol 6, which is record, collect, and decipher the cosmic messages. Now, we've come to the end of this very brief and exciting segment on this program, but we're going to invite you back for the very next program of Exopolitics Radio, and we're going to take it up at that point, talking about the Chicago O'Hare sighting. We're going to talk about galactic diplomacy, and then we're going to talk about the Exopolitics movement worldwide with our very special guest, Paola Harris, international exopolitics author and researcher extraordinaire. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, and I'm your host, Alfred Weber, and today we're with a very special guest, international exopolitics author and researcher, Paula Harris, who is a photojournalist and investigative reporter in the field of extraterrestrial-related phenomena research. She is a widely published freelance writer, especially in Europe. She has studied extraterrestrial-related phenomena since 1979, and is also on personal terms with many of the leading researchers in the field. From 1980 to 1986, she assisted Dr. J. Allen Hynek with his UFO investigations and has interviewed many top military witnesses concerning their involvement in the government truth embargo. Paula lives in Rome and Boulder, Colorado, and has a master's degree in education. She teaches history and photojournalism and online classes in exopolitics at Dr. Michael Sala's Exopolitics Institute, for which she is International Liaison Director. Welcome, Paula.
Hi, Alfred. It's great to be here with you.
Well, good, good. Finally, we've been advertising your presence here on Exopolitics Radio, and both Dr. Michael Sala and Steve Bassett have appeared here as our Exopolitics commentators, and we're very happy to welcome you aboard Exopolitics Radio.
Well, it's wonderful to be here because we're all a team. I think we're all going in quite the same direction.
You know, I have here your new book, Exopolitics: How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light, which is a very remarkable subtitle, Exopolitics Challenges and Protocols for a Future Contact, Interviews with Top-Level Witnesses. And as we were talking about prior to the program, I think that a good way to structure our conversation, at least to begin with, is to go through what you've laid out in Section 2 of the book, which I think are very important. And what you've set out are what you call challenges and protocols for future contact and the role of galactic diplomacy. And you lay out 9 protocols for interactive communication between our human civilization and extraterrestrial civilizations. And I'm here turning to page 109 with a very interesting memorandum between Albert Einstein and Robert Oppenheimer, two gentlemen who were involved at the beginning of the atomic age. And they say the most feasible solution, it would seem, would be this one: submit an agreement for the peaceful absorption of celestial rays in such a manner that our culture would remain intact, with guarantees that their presence not be revealed. They're talking about 1947. And then you ask, is this then what started this cover-up? One asks. And by this cover-up, we mean the fact that extraterrestrial civilizations have, by reliable witnesses, as you detail in your book and as Exopolitics Radio has interviewed experts prior to this, that the U.S. government, perhaps other governments, have been in secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs for at least 60 years. And yet the public knows nothing of this. And so taking that, when I was thinking of a single word that summarized your book, Paula, I thought of a banquet. It's kind of this great banquet. And so rather than start at the antipasto and, you know, go to the dessert, I'm just going to plunge in right in medias res and say, is this when the cover-up started? Did it all start with Albert Einstein, or did it start kind of with ad hoc, with the military kind of improvising when the Roswell crash started, or did it start somewhere in between there? What's your professional opinion.
Okay, the book, you're right, is a banquet because the book has word-for-word interviews with people, and that's how I work. So the whole first part is like that. This book contains the Paul Hellyer interview, the last one of the last speeches of Dr. John Mack, and an interview by Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Clark McClellan, ground crew astronaut, Dr. Stephen Greer on the death of the media, Gerardo Balducci. It has all those people that talk about this in the beginning. And then I begin to say, okay, these are credible people. They begin to talk about this. You now in 2007, we're dealing with this. What do we do? When did all this start? So I think just by looking at UFO history, and that's why I believe we should study exopolitics. The first protocol is actually studying it, that we need to study it. We need to study it as a discipline. The reason why is because I think this all happened with the Roswell crash, and I think it happened when somewhere President Truman set up this group called the Majestic 12 to oversee what they call as a problem. Now, Alfred, I've got to tell you that this MJ-12 document, or they can go on Ryan Wood's website, the Oppenheimer-Einstein memo was done in June 1947 before the crash at Roswell. So I'm writing in my book, well, what happened? Do these people are using the word extraterrestrial biological entity before the Roswell crash? Then Ryan and Bob Wood are right. There were crashes before Roswell. And I think that Albert Einstein and Robert Oppenheimer had qualms of conscience because those are the two that are involved in the development of the atomic bomb. And one of the questions in that document, Alfred, says, the final question of whether the presence of celestial aeroplanes in our atmosphere is a direct result of our testing of atomic weapons. That's in that document. And I'm thinking, okay, so if I take this document seriously, Einstein and Oppenheimer, being Duke great minds, have decided that all of these sightings, these crashes, and this contact may be a result of the testing of atomic weapons. So I kind of built my book around this memo.
Yeah, and you know, that's a very powerful memo because it goes to so many of the themes that we encounter with ETs. I know that when we've spoken to Dr. Michael Sala, we spent a couple of programs discussing the reported visit of February 20th, 1954, when he was allegedly visited by extraterrestrial ambassadors who asked him to abolish the U.S. nuclear weapons program. And here we have the two key actors, Oppenheimer and Einstein, two key actors in the U.S. nuclear weapons program, apparently being two of the key actors possibly determining the key features of the U.S. extraterrestrial program. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, just like my first book, and when you study this, I mean, when you study it, just like you'd study anthropology or political science, you tend to connect the dots. You're putting it all together. You look at the dates and you say, how come those guys are writing this memo in 1947 in June? And maybe they're really upset. But if you look at the memo, on the front page of the memo, it says, you know, this should be seen by President Truman, and instead it was kind of squelched by Vannevar Bush. He said he was definitely against it, and so I don't know if Truman ever saw this memo. But this memo, Alfred, since we're talking about it, also answers a question which I have in the book, who speaks for planet Earth? I mean, if there's this contact, and there is this contact, then who represents the human species? And Einstein and Oppenheimer on page 111, I'm going to read, this is what they said. If the United Nations were a supranatural organization, it would have competency to deal with all the problems related to the extraterrestrial people. Of course, although it is merely an international organization, it could have this competence if its member states would be willing to recognize it, which means that all the member states have to admit that UFOs are real.
Exactly. You've been listening to an Exopolitics Radio interview with Paola Harris, author of Exopolitics, How Do You Talk to a Ball of Light? This is your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, KPHX Phoenix, 1480 AM, Nova M Radio Network, at www.1480kphx.com. Our audio archives, which you can visit any day and night and listen to all of our radio programs for free, is at www.exopoliticsradio.com. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, and when you listen to this program on September 8th, 2007, I will be in New York City at the 9/11 anniversary conference delivering a talk there on announcing the Citizens 9/11 War Crimes Tribunal. 9/11 as a war crime, but the 9/11 War Crimes Tribunal as a solution. As an avenue forward through this era of war crimes that we're experiencing through to peace, justice, and a new era of cooperation and participation that we're going to be entering in. And that's the new era that we talk about here on Exopolitics Radio. So just know that your elusive host is also, as we all are, a multidimensional being, and we're acting in multiple times on multiple dimensions. And the following weekend, as you're listening to the show of September 15th, 2007, I will be addressing the X Conference in Washington, D.C., on the subject of the present and future of exopolitics. So our exopolitics commentary tonight and Saturday night will be to bring you special exclusive previews of what we'll be saying at the Exopolitics Conference for those of you who may not be there. So this is the official Exopolitics Radio commentary on Truth, Amnesty, Disclosure, the Realm of Secret Liaison Programs. And here's our proposal, that a Truth, Amnesty, Disclosure process be undertaken by the U.S. government, by the U.N., by any other national government, and are failing that by a competent grassroots governance body empowered to offer amnesty from criminal prosecution in return for transparent disclosure of secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs and the advanced energy systems transferred and developed thereunder, and for their release under open source agreements into the open market. And what that means is that over the past 60 years, at U.S. taxpayer expense, there have been ongoing top secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs with specific extraterrestrial civilizations which advance extraterrestrial technology, including time travel, teleportation technology, which we know from at least one participant in outreach programs, James Sparks, and from other whistleblowers, has this advanced technology. And that technology was given by the advanced extraterrestrials under agreements that included that it was given for the benefit of the planet and for the well-being of the planet's ecology and the well-being of us humans, you know, so that we wouldn't have these concrete highways and these pieces of iron that we move around through explosions known as internal combustion engines, internal war engines. So that's our proposal. And Truth, Amnesty, the Disclosure is a promising avenue for exopolitics because the embargo on the extraterrestrial presence is based upon the U.S. military intelligence wanting to keep its top secret human extraterrestrial programs sequestered from public non-military scrutiny. The motive of the military intelligence agencies has been to maintain a monopoly on the advanced energy technology reportedly transferred and re-engineered for human use. This advanced technology includes, we know from corroborative sources, advanced time travel and teleportation technology, which would virtually revolutionize the transport of people and goods on this planet. As part of maintaining this secret sequestration, numerous constitutional and legal structures have been violated, and the constitutional decision makers, the U.S. President, the Congress, and the courts, as adjudicators, have been kept from knowledge of these secret liaison programs, as has the Fourth Estate, the press, and our scientific and educational formal knowledge establishment. In fact, a well-funded disinformation reality has been put into place to virtually destroy any knowledge about universe society and advanced extraterrestrial sciences. Moreover, individual employees and officers within the national security state have over the course of six decades committed what would amount to a tsunami of criminal acts. How's that? A tsunami of criminal acts under the U.S. Constitution and the U.S. Criminal Code against the U.S. government itself, the civilian population, and untold properties and enterprises. I would argue that these acts rise to the level of war crimes under the Rome Statute of the International Court, crimes against humanity, aggressive war, genocide, and war crimes. In some cases, that these acts were done in the course of a military intelligence program of psychological warfare to protect secret extraterrestrial liaison programs may or may not be a valid defense to criminal prosecution, depending on individual circumstances. Disclosure and our humanity getting those advanced technologies, which was the intent of the extraterrestrial civilizations in the first place, must address this Gordian knot, that individuals within the national security state who have knowledge of the secret extraterrestrial human liaison programs and of advanced energy technologies may want to disclose these, as they were required to do under their agreements with the extraterrestrial civilizations, cannot come forward for fear of criminal prosecution. Otherwise, we will continue to seek disclosure as we have been done in the past with the same results. Nada, 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 niente, nothing. So we want to achieve disclosure. So we need to invoke truth amnesty. The motivations of specific extraterrestrial civilizations in transferring these technologies to U.S. military intelligence has been widely debated in the exopolitical community. One perspective is that these specific civilizations are, quote, manipulative or Machiavellian in terms of human social psychology. There's another alternative perspective, however. That perspective is that the civilizations are, in the words of one observer, quote, different from human psychology. This is the reported rationale of the actual ET civilization that has been part of a top-secret human extraterrestrial liaison program as translated into simple human terms. One, the extraterrestrial civilization has been in secret human extraterrestrial contact, and secret agreements have been made which contain clauses as to when the presence of the ETs would be made known. These terms have been disregarded by the U.S. military intelligence. Crimes have been committed by the U.S. military intelligence in connection with these programs in which the ETs had no part. Two, emergency secret agreements were undertaken by the ETs because the planet was in peril, because the human population had to be acculturated to their presence, because advanced technology and advice had to be applied to restore the environment. The environmental applications have been ignored by U.S. military intelligence. Three, the ET technology, which the U.S. military intelligence and elite possess, read Rockefeller interests, which amount to $10 trillion, can restore the ecological balance and transform the permanent war economy. Four, a complete, fully detailed amnesty, truth amnesty, is necessary so that the full technology and know-how of the extraterrestrial presence can be applied, that is, actually enforcing the original agreement with the extraterrestrials to restore the Earth and move away from the permanent war economy. The logic and calculus of these statements seem transparent. We know independently from whistleblowers that each of these statements appears to have a basis in fact. Logic would dictate, then, that our disclosure strategy should incorporate a truth amnesty process with it. If what the whistleblowers and the reported ETs are saying is true, absent an amnesty process, we do not have much of a chance of disclosure by U.S. military intelligence, which is the core agency maintaining liaison programs with ET civilizations at this time. On the other hand, by constructing a truth amnesty disclosure program, as reportedly recommended by the participating extraterrestrials themselves, we can begin to create a framework for the altogether human psychology of the military intelligence agencies and those white hats in these agencies who may want to follow through on the original intent of the secret agreements to restore the Earth and transform the permanent war economy into a sustainable, cooperative, peaceful, new energy-based, universe-oriented society. This has been an official Exopolitics radio commentary on extraterrestrial disclosure and a proposal for truth amnesty to secure extraterrestrial disclosure, which we've been attempting to secure now for 60 years. 60 years. I can remember the Carter administration in the 70s trying to secure extraterrestrial disclosure. If we keep on doing what we've been doing year after year and achieving, expecting to achieve different results, that's the definition of what? Being out of touch. Others say insanity. So let's move to other formulas. Let's look at perhaps taking a cue from the extraterrestrials that reportedly were party to the agreement themselves and look at a formula like truth amnesty to achieve extraterrestrial disclosure. Now, we have a very interesting interview coming up with Paula Harris, author of the book Exopolitics, How Do You Talk to a Ball of Light? I call the book a veritable feast. There are so many dishes in it, and we'll be concentrating on the protocols of dealing with extraterrestrial civilizations. So please stay tuned for part one of an Exopolitics radio interview with Paula Harris, author of Exopolitics, How Do You Speak to a Ball of Light? This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Thank you.